All right, we're talking to Dan Mason, who worked at WKLO doing overnights in the early 70s. When exactly were you at WKLO, Dan?
I was there in 1973, in the fall of 73 into 74, so almost a year there over those 2 years.
Now, you grew up in Louisville, right?
I did. I grew up in Louisville, went to St. X High School, and went on to Eastern Kentucky for college, but was an avid listener at 12 years old to both stations, so it was a great education growing up in Louisville to see what two great radio stations could sound like.
And you're talking about WKLO and Wacky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have one that you preferred over the other?
Whoever had the best contest going on at the time, because that was an actual contest pick, I bounced back and forth. As a matter of fact, Terrell Matheny, when he programmed WKLO, made an announcement that I couldn't win on the radio station anymore because I had won my maximum for the day. But that didn't stop me, John, because I went up and down the road and used my friends' names and addresses on my street. So, you know, I could not be stopped. So whoever had the best contest on it was usually who I gravitated to because I did love to play contest.
Do you remember some of the prizes you won?
I won a trip to Coney Island from WKLO. I won a trip to see the Beatles at Crosley Field, which was rained out. I won so many records, pizzas, that I couldn't even begin to count them all. I would ride a bus for 15 miles to downtown Louisville just to pick up a 59-cent box of Pizza Mix. That's how much I loved the radio station. I can even recall, you know, WKLO was on West Walnut back then. They had a showcase window, and I would stand in front of that window constantly and watch the disc jockeys. So ever since I was 11 or 12 years old, all I ever wanted to do was to be on the radio. I can even remember sending in critiques of every disc jockey to the program director, and I think at the time I sent my critique package, Johnny Randolph was a program director at Wacky, so they all heard an earful of me. I was a high school reporter on WKLO, so I was actively involved with both stations.
What are some of the cool things that you remember about WKLO and Wacky as far as some of the promotions they did?
Oh, gosh, I remember the old WKLO Christmas tree promotion that was done. I remember the treasure hunt that they did. I remember lost dogs with the dog tags, you know, which later in the 80s, I ran the same promotion at KFMK in Houston as a general manager. It would go on and on. There were so many creative contests. And the interesting thing about Johnny Randolph with how he programmed the radio station, he could make a trivia contest sound exciting on the radio. It was a wonderful time for a student of programming to grow up in Louisville and hear those two radio stations. And that continued, I would say, from maybe 65 all the way through at least 1975. Those 10 years right there were probably very good formulative years for me to learn on what a radio station should sound like.
Who are some of the disc jockeys that really impressed you at WKLO?
I was always impressed with Wild Willie, who was Bill Hennis back then. I couldn't believe how much he screamed on the radio. There is the Flying Dutchman, Ken Douglas. I remember him. I remember, of course, Lee Gray, the late Lee Gray. I remember John Gray, even though they weren't related. I thought they were brothers. Charlie Knox, who's since passed on. Then there was the great Bill Bailey. So one right after another.
Did you have a favorite?
You know, I have to say I probably enjoyed listening to Johnny Randolph because he was doing nights at the time when I had the most time available to listen. He had the best prizes that I could win, and he took a little bit of a personal interest in me as a listener, so I think he was probably my favorite.
Could you tell much difference between the approach that KLO was doing in the late 60s and early 70s as opposed to what Wacky was doing during the same time period?
Yeah, I think WKLO slanted their music a bit urban, and Wacky slanted their music possibly a little bit to the countryside. From a music standpoint, I thought WKLO was way ahead of their time by making that urban slant on a top 40 radio station. And, of course, Wacky had several different number one records like Satin Sheets by Jeannie Pruitt and Behind Closed Doors by Charlie Rich that went on to be number one on that particular station. That, you know, that didn't happen in that many regional markets in the U.S. at that time. So musically, there was a difference between the two of them. Personality-wise, they both had very, very good personalities. It was too close to call. But of course, WKLO was doing the Drake format, and Wacky was more a personality in free form. So within each format style, they were both just wonderful examples of great radio.
How did you make that first step to get on the radio and get your first paid radio gig, and where was it?
I think I might have worked at WXVW over in Jeffersonville for Charlie Jenkins. He was the general manager. Mike Densford was the program director. And I believe I worked there on a Sunday afternoon. I remember even when I went to Eastern, I drove all the way from Richmond all the way to New Albany, Indiana, just to do a three-hour shift on the old WHEL, where I could only talk once an hour. And that's how much I've just really loved the business and still love the business as much as I did 30, 35 years ago.
I know you ended up at WEKY in Richmond as program director, plus you worked at WVLK in Lexington.
I did, both those stations. And, of course, working at WVLK in Lexington was a wonderful learning experience, too, because I'm not familiar with what they sound like now, but back then they were just a wonderful medium market station that you could hold up as an example of solid programming. I mean, who does news on Saturday morning anymore? WVLK was just one station that was so involved in the community. Everything they did was just about Lexington. They're just to be commended for the outstanding service that they did for that community.
Okay, how did you end up on WKLO? And I guess that was a dream come true, right?
It was. It took me about two or three times to get on because no one would hire me, but I finally made it on. I was doing nights on KBEQ in Kansas City and did want to get back to Louisville. And I believe Robin Walker hired me to come back and do just weekend shifts in the beginning. And then I found my way to the overnight show, luckily, when there was some opening. And I was happy just to be doing overnights. We had a good team. We had Bill Love in the morning. I think Gary Major and Tom Kennedy split off on middays to nights. Then Mike Rivers did afternoons, and Ron Lake did evenings, and I followed Ron overnight.
Ron Lake's a good friend of mine. What did you think of him as a jock?
I think he was very creative. He's got so much talent. I mean, he went on and had some really nice major market jobs, too, after that. He started the rock and roll pig concept, and that was always fun to listen to.
What about Tom Kennedy?
Tom Kennedy was a great Drake-type disc jockey. I believe he's working for ABC in Dallas now, the network. A good, solid format jock. He just executed, you know, very smooth, excellent disc jockey.
Bill Love.
Bill Love was a unique entertainer, very warm-sounding. He was like a disc jockey's disc jockey to be around. He was really a trip. Funny guy. I can remember so many funny exchanges I would have with him coming in the mornings when, I was leaving and Bill was coming on. He was always there for a laugh, always cheerful. And I think that went through to his audience, too.
Gary Major.
Good disc jockey, solid guy. I don't remember that much about Gary, but I believe he did a lot of assistant PD-type work for Robin Walker as well.
What about Mike Rivers?
Mike Rivers, there's a great story. I remember a Valentine's Day, and he couldn't think of what to get his girlfriend for Valentine's Day. We had a big studio in the basement of WKLO, and Mike went downstairs at maybe 10 o'clock that night. And I can recall that he and I and Ron Lake were talking, as a matter of fact, because Ron was on the air. At 10 o'clock at night, he couldn't decide what to get his girlfriend for Valentine's Day, so he thought he'd write her a song. And at 6 o'clock the next morning, he came out of the basement down there where we had the studio with an incredible love song that he had written, sung, and produced to his girlfriend. And he did this all in like an 8-hour period. We were shocked that he could do that, but that's how talented Mike was. You know, he could just do anything in that room. I mean, everybody on our staff was always in awe of him. We were fascinated by his talent, and he was very unique, both as a disc jockey and a production guy.
He even did the WKLO jingles, too.
Yeah, he did. He did. I don't know if the station ever saved that much money by Mike doing them, but because, of course, you could always buy stuff in a can. But there's not very many things Mike couldn't do in that production room.
You were a big fan of WKLO and WAKY growing up. Did that same excitement about the radio station, especially WKLO, carry over when you were actually working there day to day? Were you still excited about being there, or did it kind of set in that, hey, this is the way radio really is, and it's not nearly as much fun as winning the pizza mix?
No, it was better. I mean, my goodness, you were right in the middle of the wars, you know, the ratings wars. And even today, as you well know, the wacky disc jockeys and WKLO disc jockeys, there's a camaraderie there. I mean, it was not unusual for, like, I remember Chuck Jackson would get off the air at 2 a.m. at Wacky, and he would come sit in the first hour of my show from like 2A to 3A. I mean, how unusual is that? You don't really see that anymore in radio, especially if you can find anybody live in radio anymore overnight. But there was a great camaraderie. I can remember that we all ran around together. I can remember going out with Coyote Calhoun and running around at the bars. I mean, it was a unique organization of people.
So you left WKLO, and any particular reason why?
No, I wanted a better shift, more money like every disc jockey would, and I subsequently went on to Z93 in Atlanta to do nights, and I became the assistant PD there and then moved up to program director there in the mid-70s, went on into the late-70s as program director at PGC in Washington, and then began to get into the management side and became a general manager in 1980, and then went on to be a president of other companies in the mid-80s, and all the way up till about 2002 when I retired from Infinity. But yet I still consult Infinity and a number of other companies in the business. So it's really fun to continue to be in this business even after you've had a long career.